Hi everyone, and welcome back to Cloud Conversations. My name is Peter Rising, and I am your sole host on this episode of Cloud Conversations. Cat Beedham was called away at the last minute. Such is the nature of working in the busy industry that we are all a part of. So she may or may not join us later. We shall see. We shall see. We'll watch out for her, and she may pop up halfway through. If she does, she does. If she doesn't, she doesn't. But I am joined by a wonderful guest today, and if you are not up, you'd have to be living under a rock or not part of our wonderful community or in our industry not to know my guest today. It is the wonderful Tom Arbuthnot. How are you doing, Tom? Welcome to the show.
Yeah, really good. Thanks. Yeah, I appreciate being on the show. It's one that's on my podcast list, so nice to be a guest.
Amazing. No, you were very, very welcome indeed. We've been trying to sort of get you to join us for a little while.
And yeah, we've been back and forth on diaries. This is the challenge of podcasts, isn't it? Trying to find slots is always a challenge.
It really is. It really is. It's so difficult getting everyone together. But we've got it. You've made it. So thank you and welcome. So if you wouldn't mind, Tom, giving a quick introduction to yourself, who you are, and what you do, and your sort of journey in your career and the community today, just a little brief history, that would be great.
Yeah, sure. Start there. Sure, happy to. Yeah, I've been in the community for well over a decade now, probably 12 years or so, I guess, 10 years in MVP. And I actually came from, originally I worked in a Cisco partner doing Cisco call manager, so Cisco telephony. And in that role, I started doing more and more Microsoft stuff. That was OCS in the day, if anybody goes back that far, and Exchange 2010 voicemail. And I kind of felt like Microsoft were, you know, coming into that space. And this is, you know, say over a decade ago now, and bringing some innovation. So I switched over to working for a Microsoft partner called Modality Systems. So I was number 7 in there. And we kind of just rode the wave of that whole OCS, Link, Skype for Business, and then later Teams journey. And all through that, I was very keen, even in my Cisco days, on blogging and working out loud and sharing. That was just a really big part of what I did. We started a Microsoft UC User Group London, which has been going on for over a decade now. Quarterly meetings in London, kind of about 30 to 50 people through that time. And fortunate to get MVP relatively early in that journey, and have been doing various community projects ever since.
Amazing. Yeah. So you've had the MVP for 10 years. And something else I noticed on your LinkedIn profile is that you are also Microsoft Certified Master, which is something you can't get anymore, right?
Yeah, that was really fun. I'm really disappointed that's gone. So Microsoft had this high level accreditation for certain products. They did it for SharePoint, they did it for Exchange, they did it for Link at the time when I did it. Maybe Skype for Business, might have been Skype for Business. But yeah, they were super, super deep dive, 3 weeks. And originally it was residential, and then they started doing it online as well. And it was like you got to train with the really high level Microsoft people and other partners. And it was really into the weeds. So it kind of gave you that in the Microsoft exam. You know, you have the associate, the kind of advanced one, and then you'd have the MCM would be the top one. But Microsoft kind of discontinued that program. They felt that they wanted more generalists as they moved to the cloud, and less elite stuff, and there was less server stuff to do. So it's one you can kind of hold on to forever as having been there, done that. And there's a great network of old MCMs who all still talk to each other. It was good times.
Oh, nice one. That's very impressive indeed. I didn't know much about that, so it's good to fill in the blank there. But you talk about Link and Skype for Business there, and takes you back, doesn't it? And reminds you of the evolution that Microsoft have been on with a lot of things. What a journey that they've been on in the last 10 or so years, especially since the advent of Microsoft or Office 365, whatever you want to call it,
depending on what Microsoft are calling it this week.
Yeah, Microsoft changing things, whoever would have thought. But so the voice side of things, unified comms and Teams for voice is where we're at today. What's the state of play with that that sort of area of the Microsoft 365 story at the minute, where are we at? Because that's not an area that I'm too familiar with or have touched on very much.
Yeah, that's kind of what I grew up on. So all through the Lincoln Skype for Business days, it was just unified communications. So we didn't yet have collaboration in that stack. So unified communications being kind of VoIP internal, on network calling, phone or PSDO. It was called Enterprise Voice back in the day. It's had various names, but having a real phone number and a real phone, and then obviously meetings, video, desktop sharing, that kind of thing. That used to be, required a decent amount of servers and a decent amount of complexity and PBX interop and session border controllers. And that's what I grew up on, lots of pro services work to do that stuff. Then Microsoft brought out Skype Business Online, which was essentially Skype servers running in the cloud, but it never really had a great voice story. Teams has got very mature in cloud voice. So depending on what stats you kind of reckon with, that they're the leader in cloud telephony. So they have publicly 12 million people using Teams for their phone. I think the number's up slightly higher now internally, but they've put 5 million people on in the last 12 months. So it's becoming much, much more mainstream. It's still a fraction of the 280 million active users, monthly active users Microsoft have got now. So they just announced their Q2 number and it's gone up by another 10 million. So as a proportion of Teams users, it's still relatively low. There's a lot of growth opportunity. I mostly work with large enterprise, so kind of 10,000 users and up. And most of the orgs I'm working with are on a journey now. They've already got Teams for meetings. Like Teams is pretty dominant enterprise for meetings. And now they're starting to cut their phones over to Teams.
Oh, amazing. It's really interesting for me to get these other sides of these other parts of the puzzle, because where I'm camped very much in the I started off in Office 365 migrations from Exchange on premises to Exchange Online. Got plenty of war wounds from that. I never want to see another migration as long as I live. some horror stories there. I learned what not to do very, very early, which is a good way to learn, I suppose. But and then I evolved sort of from that into Teams and SharePoint, certainly not on the voice side of things, and then sort of organically into security, compliance, and identity, which is where I sort of sit today.
The world's collided, so much, haven't they? Because you used to be able to kind of be very specialist and like, I used to go nowhere near data. The nearest data conversation we had was instant message history and do you keep it or not? And it lived in Exchange. A little bit of touch on Exchange for voicemail, but largely you wouldn't have those conversations much. And SharePoint was a whole different beast. That was the kind of data storage. But Teams, particularly as a workload, has brought all those conversations into one, because obviously all the data is now in SharePoint, tightly integrated. You've got OneDrive there for your personal data. As you say, security, compliance, massive conversation. So I've been skilling up on that side of the house in my team's journey. You know, the voice stuff is what I know well, the UC stuff, but certainly there's a lot to the whole story. And that's the blessing and the curse of Microsoft 365, isn't it? Like everything's there, but you need to understand it all.
Oh, definitely. There's so much to learn and it's ever changing. It's like constantly painting the fourth rail bridge up in Scotland. You get to the end of it and then you've got to start all over again.
And partners and customers are still adapting to that, and it's a long journey for them to get away from I learn a thing. And certainly even partners whose job it is to keep up to date, we're still often used to, like, I get really good on a server and I get 3 years where it basically doesn't change and I know it. Now it's, you have to be on top of your learning and your understanding. You know, every day something changes in the cloud, which I find really fun and really exciting, but it's a lot to keep on top of.
Oh, it is, definitely. And do you find that where Microsoft want people to be, the story they want to tell and the sales players that they have at any given time, would you say it's a fair reflection? Certainly I find this is in my little corner of it, that the customers are maybe he's not mature enough for that in general yet, that they maybe he's a year behind where Microsoft.
Microsoft are always forward leaning, like both by design and kind of by accident. They always think the market is a little bit ahead of where the market actually is, and a lot of time they're pushing things forward. But you just look at enterprises and how they're architected from a people point of view, it's often different teams for unified communications, for collaboration, for security and compliance, not well aligned. And then something like Teams comes along, it's like, oh, well, we all need to talk and align. So that can get interesting. Rooms again in Teams, often a different department, different group of people. So yeah, I think the world is coming there, and the pandemic accelerated everything rapidly. It kind of validated the need and the scale of the cloud, and that has helped. And certainly on the, it'd be interesting to get your point of view on the InfoSec point of view, kind of security compliance, but that feels like it's catching up now with like, well, cloud is a reality. We can't say no to it anymore. So we've got to learn how to manage it.
Oh, definitely. That is spot on, because the conversations that I'm having with customers now, they're coming to us asking to have these conversations. Whereas 2 or 3 years ago, pre-pandemic, we were having to do a lot of work to get that conversation. But now people are wanting to talk about, I mean, the device management side of things, the security side, if you like, has been there longer. It's the compliance and the privacy that has been the harder conversations to have. As much as anything, it's getting, as you said, getting in front of the right people in the organizations. Because nine times, a lot of the time, the people who need to be sat down and forced to think about it don't have the time, or perceive that they don't have the time, or that it's not important enough in their day-to-day routine and to consider it. It's
a lot of the time you're starting from a point like the Teams team are running ahead with the Teams project, and the compliance team need to sign it off, but they don't understand the fundamentals of it. So sometimes you have to take a couple of steps backwards and talk about what it is and where it fits in the overall strategy. And you can't just jump into one meeting at sign off because they haven't got context of what the overall project is. So certainly in enterprise consulting, a lot of your time is spent wrangling and helping get teams together and get everybody on message.
Yeah. And for me, cybersecurity should underpin everything. I think of it, I use an analogy from a Office 365 standpoint, and that SharePoint is really what underpins a lot of the nice shiny things. It's at the back end of Teams and OneDrive, and it ties into Dynamics. It's got its hooks into everything. And cybersecurity, on a broader perspective, should be like that. It should be involved in pretty much all the conversations that you have.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it should be front and center of a lot of them, really.
Definitely. So what's interesting to me is I can, in our little community that we have, our wonderful community, when I think of Unified Comms and Teams Voice, I can maybe think of about 10 or so people like your good self who are sort of big established names in that area. Do you think that's reflective of where the maturity of the product? Do you think we'll see more people getting into that?
Yeah, it definitely is, actually. You make a good point. So it used to be a much stronger voice and UC community when it was server-based, and it was super complicated, and that drew in a lot of people. So if you go back 5 or 6 years, I'd say there were a lot more names. A bunch of them have gone to Microsoft. A bunch of them got into security, to InfoSec, to cloud. As voice got simpler, quote-unquote, and cloudified, there's a whole bunch of people that it's less exciting for, because it's not wrangling really complex technology anymore. A lot of it is project. So and a bunch of people didn't want to get into the collab end of Teams. They just like voice, and those people are still about, for sure. But if you just like voice, your job these days is about migration and about getting people to a cloud scale service. So it's less exciting than for those people than it was, say, like a decade ago. So one of my early projects on Link 2010 was getting a fire station to work and have IP phones and have the bells ringing off of SBCs, audio codes SBCs, and like the technology there, it was very cutting edge, and you were working stuff out, you were innovating. A lot of that has been commoditized by cloud, so I think it's a different set of people now, and the conversation on Teams is way wider than just voice as well. Rooms are a very important part of the conversation. Collab is a very important part of the conversation. So I don't think there's a lot of people fresh into the community who are super excited about just voice. I think there'll be wider Teams people.
It's interesting. And as it moves forward, do you foresee it touching on some of the buzz things like AI and IoT, that sort of thing? Will that
link 100% into AI, things? Yeah. I mean, there's already a lot of AI in Teams. It's just AI is blown up at the moment because of ChatGPT, but there's AI doing lots of codec optimization, things like those auto replies. There's a bunch there, but there's more that will come to the surface for sure. And one of the interesting opportunities with Teams, and Microsoft have bundled it into the Teams premium SKU, is meeting summarization. So taking all those meeting recordings, summarizing them, pulling out key points, that could be a massive productivity boost when that becomes right. And also auto replies being actually really, really useful, like contextual auto replies using AI could be really interesting. So there's a bunch of ways I can see that AI will get embedded into Teams. And it looks like Microsoft are really investing in OpenAI and pulling that into the Azure cloud. So I think if we look 5 years ahead, that will be the differentiation in these products. Most UC stuff is pretty similar these days in terms of you can do a great video call, you can do internal calling, you can do chat, you can do Teams chat. But I think the AI will start to separate away some of the big players from the other players.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. I think for anyone wanting to get into our industry right now, anyone coming out of school or college or university, they're looking for a career in tech, start looking at AI. It is it's like what's his name from Avengers, it's inevitable.
It's such a hot area, and also security never goes away. Like, it only becomes a bigger, more challenging problem. Like, it's that's a really exciting area as well. But yeah, AI is going to have definitely a bigger impact. We all understand it's going to have a big impact. I think it's going to have a bigger impact than even we think, and we think it's going to have a big impact. It's going to be really interesting.
I definitely agree with that. Listen, I could ask you questions like this all day. This is really fun and interesting, but I want to shift gears a little bit, and I want to talk about what you're doing right now, your current venture, really exciting, that you've been doing for about 6 months to a year, I think you were telling me, and it's Empowering Cloud. You want to tell me a bit about that?
Yeah, sure. Yeah, I'm really excited about it. So I spent 11 years at that partner modality, mostly working with enterprise customers. So it was very big seat count, like expensive day rate type consulting. And I just found more and more of those customers, because Teams was going as UCaaS, software as a service, they needed less traditional like managed service. There was less servers, there was less infrastructure, but they still really needed the strategic advice, the insights, the understanding what's going on. So that kind of planted a seed in my head to have an opportunity to do something different. And rather than talking to those customers one-to-one, like, can I scale out that advice and guidance? And in parallel to that, obviously I've done the community thing for quite a long time, the blog, the user groups, etc. I wanted to do something that would help build a sustainable way to create community content, essentially. Because the problem with community projects, and we talked about it a little bit before the pod, is they're everybody's free time, and you get, you know, you get some time, you do some stuff. And like, my blog was mostly Sunday night with a glass of wine every week was like a couple of hours blogging. But you can only sustain that for so long. So I wanted to build something that had community at the core and could share a bunch of information, but was also sustainable. So I span out of modality a year ago, almost exactly. And we spent a bit of time working out what the model would be. I did some contracts and different bits and pieces. But where we've landed with Empowering Cloud is we have three pillars. So community is deliberately the first pillar. And we have a bunch of really great sponsors that put some money into to run the platform. We built a platform on Azure with Tom Morgan, another fellow MVP. And we have both myself, Tom Morgan, and about 16 contributors, Kat actually being one, producing 15-minute video briefings completely free to access. So we have over 2,000 people now who have joined and are coming back and rewatching the briefings. And we have monthly updates, and we dig into the weeds on Teams and the ecosystem. And we're starting to expand into Viva and security, things that touch Teams. So that was the core idea, was to have six big sponsors and a whole bunch of smaller sponsors. That pays for the platform, that pays for a community manager, Lindsay, who's full-time focused on that community. So that's number one and the most important pillar. Then we have enablement. So we have paid programs where I work with specific partners or enterprises. And it's a combination of, they get some extra time with me, but also we do learning paths for them. So their pre-sales team, what do they need to know about Teams? Their sales team, what do they need to know? And on the customer side, enterprise, it's like operations team, support team, service owner. So pulling on some of that content, giving them some extra content, but the idea being that 95% of the content is always free to access, and that's those people that need the extra help, the learning path, the quizzes, the certificates, that kind of thing. And then the final pillar is research. So we have a great person starting in March, who I know well from previous life, whose full-time role is going to be talking with those enterprises, talking with the community, talking with Microsoft, and pulling together more deep depth research. So things like, how would you make your contact center decision on Teams? How would you make a recording platform decision? And we're not trying to be kind of Gartner and say, this one's great and this one's not so great. We're trying to educate the market and the customers into, if you're choosing Microsoft Teams Rooms, these are the things to consider. If you're choosing a recording platform, these are the things to consider. Because nobody's really doing that level of research. The partners obviously have a preferred vendor and they would suggest that. Microsoft will say, our ecosystem are lovely, we love them all, you know, they're all equal, we don't give advice on who to choose. So I feel like there's a real opportunity for us, and kind of luckily the reach I have with friends at vendors, friends at Microsoft, friends in enterprise, to get a really honest view of what's going on. So that research pillar starts in March, but really pleased with where we are so far. We launched in July last year, so we've been going about 6 months. I say over 2,000 people on the platform. Full credit to Tom Morgan for scaling an LMS with quizzes and learning paths and everything else inside 6 months pre-launch. And it's all, say, Azure-based. So we're on the Microsoft Startup Program, so we get a lot of funding from them as well, which is really good.
Oh, amazing. Yeah, kudos to Tom Morgan for sure. That is a hell of an achievement in that time scale, to be sure. And I absolutely love what you're doing. It's a really innovative approach, not something that I've heard of being done before, and I think it has heaps of potential. So kudos to you all for what you're doing. I think it's wonderful.
Yeah, we're really excited. I think we've hit on a model now, and sustainability is really the key for me. Is I couldn't keep delivering the amount I want to deliver in terms of the updates and the research part-time. Like, it's really hard. So making it a model where we can sustain it through sponsorship and those enablement programs, but still give tons and tons of value away and work with lots of people in the community, because I didn't want it to be the Tom show. I wanted it to be like bringing the SMEs from all over the world who have done this stuff for real. Teams is too big for any one person to know everything. We need the community to kind of pull the real story together. And that's proving out to work really well, because I can go find the best person to talk about sensitivity labels, or the best person to talk about how Viva Learning actually works, or how, you know, how VDI works in Teams. These are specialist subjects. And we're trying to push it into 15 minutes, so they're really bite-sized, and you can pull that information out, you know, without having to sit a four-hour course, which is the traditional learning way.
Yeah, definitely. You mentioned community quite a lot, and I've noticed in the last sort of two or three roles that I've had that the organizations that I've been a part of are starting to have a much bigger awareness of the importance of community, and they're much more present at community events that in person in the UK, where we are both based, like South Coast Summit and Comsverse and Scottish Summit and all the big ones. Sorry if I've missed an obvious one. Have you noticed that too? Have you noticed that the community is becoming more important and key to organizations than it ever has before?
Yeah, I think people are definitely recognizing that. I think also, like, decision makers are harder to get to. So it used to be, you know, you would go to shows, quote unquote, you know, big events, and you would talk to decision makers. I don't think decision makers are so in that sphere anymore of going to those shows. So reaching people is more about building a relationship now. It's not about just marketing. And I think people are way more savvy than they used to be. So like, people, you see a lot of companies run into the community for a bit, spend a load of marketing money, and then go away again. And people can suss that out a million miles away. So I think companies that are smart are getting wise to the value of, like, sustainably being involved. And that's where I've been really lucky with the sponsors. I mean, the sponsors that have come forward for us, I've known a lot of them for many years. All I did really was show them a PowerPoint and say, this is what we plan to do. But fortunately, they get the value of supporting the community. And I'm doing a couple of webinars and bits and pieces for them. So there's a give-get there. but more than anything, that they're just happy for the chance to have some eyeballs, support the conversations, raise awareness in the market of all the kind of, you know, opportunities and challenges. And I do think smart companies are finding that balance rather than spending just loads and loads of money on really big tier one events, for example. Like, why not pump some of that money into sustainable, scalable community work and build the relationships?
Oh, I completely agree. Yeah. And in the sort of roles that you and I have and many people we know have, it's really quite challenging, as you've already said, to maintain that balance between doing your day-to-day job and finding time to do all the blogs and the podcasts and
it really is. It's more than a full-time job sometimes. And that was a big motivation for me building my own company, was I did that stuff on the side before. And our Modality were really good. They were one of those companies that super recognized the impact of community. So I had a lot of flexibility in my role there. But it was still all extra time. And for example, Lindsay, who's amazing, she's our community manager. Like, her full-time job is corralling content out of fellow MVPs and just making sure it all goes and make sure the community are looked after. And that takes time and money. You can't do all that stuff on the side. So hence the first pillar being community. And I'm hopeful we'll prove that being community first is a sustainable, scalable model.
Yeah, I definitely think it will be, without a doubt. But talking a bit about activities in the community and your sort of social reach, because you've been around in the community, as you say, for a good long time now, 10 or so years. This was a question that Kat specifically wanted me to ask you, actually, when she was planning to join us. But she wanted to know, do you have a secret for what your reach is? Because you've got a strong following, and is there a secret sauce to that? I would say that it's probably just that your content is fantastic and your reputation is what it is. But is it more than that, or is it a mixture of things?
There's no secret bullet, unfortunately, that I can say, like, do this and your numbers will grow, other than delivering consistent value. Like, again, I was lucky with Modality. They were super willing to have me give any bit of information away. So, you know, like, I would do projects where we got paid really good money, and I would blog exactly how we did it. And they're like, cool, because the people that want to pay will come and work with the partner, and the people that won't. It's just really a decade of showing up and delivering value, you know, the classic community stuff. Like, something will come back in return. You don't need to overtly do the give get. You just give and give and give, and things come back. So, I'm really lucky. I was big into LinkedIn fairly early. So LinkedIn's my dominant platform, coming up to 35,000 people on there, which is just a ridiculous number. And I think more speaks to the market being interested in teams apart from anything else, you know. But LinkedIn last year, I just did the numbers, was 3 million views. Like, it's just crazy there. But it's all, you know, there's a really strong community of subject matter experts there, and we often have debates in the comments, and I have loads of people who drop me tips in, you know, direct messages and team messages. This is happening, that's changing, this vendor's doing that. So I'm lucky to have a good network of what's going on, which just gives me a constant feed of interesting content to talk about.
Oh, amazing. Well, more power to you, my friend. I think your content speaks for itself, and if you've not checked out what Tom shares, then you're missing a lot of really amazing stuff.
I appreciate that.
So let's pivot a little bit. What does a Tom Arbuthnot do in his spare time, if there is such a thing?
That's a misnomer, right?
Switch off from all this.
Yeah, it's interesting. I'm very heavily into this, but I've got two young kids. I've got a 5-year-old and 8-year-old. So anytime I'm not spending on the new business or content or events and speaking, is very much tied into them. There's literally a club every day of the week. You know, there's dance and acro and all sorts of things. So this Saturday I'm spending a whole day doing being a dance chaperone at a dance kind of show they have. So the girls keep me really, really busy, and family life, and then it's just work. And again, I'm super lucky with what I'm doing now, it gives me a lot of flexibility. So I do work a lot of hours, but I can jump out and do the school run. I can, you know, do the events and things like that. So really lucky to have that flexibility in my life to spend a lot of time with the girls as well.
Oh, definitely. And it has become easier to do the community stuff in some ways, because especially post COVID, and that a lot has gone to virtual. So, and you can jump on stuff. It's not as hard as it used to be when so much more was in person and you'd be away from your family for a night
definitely.
Or two.
I'm traveling a lot less than I used to be. Like there's probably a show a month or something where I'm traveling, or I'm into London a bit, and previously, because I was consulting directly, it was lots of on-site, so it was most days in London. And it's funny going back to that now. I was in London yesterday, and it's like the time suck now of doing that travel. I really feel it. I used to do that, me and my wife, you know, pre-kids, we used to both do London 5 days a week, and we were on the train at 7 and back about 7. And that was totally normal. I can't imagine doing that now, but it was just, that was the routine. So, it's nice. It's a bit more flexible these days.
Yeah, I know exactly what you mean, because funny, I was out and about yesterday. I went to Sheffield as we filmed this, and it's not far from me. I just live in Teesside, so it's a quick drive to Darlington Station, then an hour and a bit train, so not very much at all, but I'm just not used to it anymore. And yeah. I got home quite a decent hour. I was back by about 5:30, something like that, and I was really tired. I'm just not used to it anymore. It really takes it out of you. And I do, it's interesting because I hear different thoughts and opinions on how it should be post-pandemic. There's lots of folks who I know who want to go back to the way it was entirely and like being on the road. And I'm one who likes the travel to be the exception rather than the rule. So I'm quite happy in my little office shed here for the most part. But I do like to see people now and again. So once in a while, it's nice to get down to London or wherever there's a big event.
I think a bit like seasons quite often as well in your career. So I think it's really tough for people coming into the workplace now. Like I credit a lot of my career success with spending disproportionate time with leadership in the companies I work with. So, you know, James Rod, who was the CEO of Modality, is involved in the Empowering Cloud stuff. And a lot of good conversations with those people who are busy are first thing in the morning with coffee or last thing at night when you're still hanging around. So when you're in the early stage of your career, being able to be around people and have the osmosis effect of hearing what they're up to and jumping into the meeting, it's very hard to get that remote. As you're a bit more established, like you are in your career, I am in mine, you have the network, you have the reach, you have the confidence to reach out to people and say, let's jump on. So I think we need a mix, but I do feel that the young people or new into the career, not even necessarily young, but career switching, I think you have to be super proactive if you're remote to get those relationships and even like forcing that conversation of let's go for lunch, let's travel in, let's do something, that networking that just happens around the, you know, the water cooler and the lunchtime if you're in an office. I don't know what the right answer is, but some kind of mix I think is probably optimal.
I think that's a really interesting take on it, actually. I'd never thought of it from the younger generation standpoint starting their career, and I've got a good example of that. Actually, there's a young lad who works in my team, really, really switched on. He's like a sponge. He's going to go far. He's in his career without a doubt. But I was talking to him, and he's only something in 20 or something like that. He was saying to me the other day only that this is all he's known. He started his career remotely. He's not been used to having that office experience. So I agree with you. I think I very much want to get the opportunity to mentor and pass on what we've learned in our sort of experience of our careers to the younger ones coming in, because I think it must be very difficult for them, without a doubt. And I think the other challenge that I worry about, I mean, I've got a 16-year-old boy who's doing his GCSEs this year, and what they're teaching him in computer studies, if you want a career in tech, I don't really feel that that's going to prepare them in any way, shape, or form for something like a path like Microsoft or going to AWS or Google or whatever. I think there's a big disconnect between education and where the big tech companies.
I 100% agree. I don't think it's just in tech. I think across the board, education is unfortunately quite slow to react to the market. It's very systematic in how it works. You only have to look at where tech is going. I think I'd like to see education be more about the fundamentals, but also about the people skills, the EQ, the networking, the how the world really works. I think there's a bit of a revolution coming in that, probably in that college and university space, where, you know, you're being asked to spend money now, albeit take government loans, but spend money on your education. And where's the ROI on that? It was very clear a decade ago, like, you got your 2-1 or your first, and that got you the interviews and stuff. But with things like the AI technology coming along and technology rapidly changing, I think the education space has to change.
It definitely does, without a doubt, because there's a massive opportunity to get into this industry right now, because
with the Great Resignation, there's tons of people needed in those areas, and some third party commercial companies have plugged some of those gaps with kind of boot camps and skilling up and things like that. But I mean, all the information is out there. That's the funny thing, is like YouTube and Google and blogs and stuff, like, most information is available. It's helping people, you know, kind of get through the massive information to exactly what they need and build those skills up. I think that's going to be the real skill.
Oh, I totally agree. Well, I hope we can get there, and I have to have faith that we will, because I want my son and his peers, his generation, to have that opportunity to be able to get into not just tech, but to have the right sort of steps of it, whatever their passions.
And it's even interesting, into tech is even an interesting conversation, isn't it? Because what won't be tech? Like every career is going to be touched by it, isn't it? So it's like, actually, does tech become less of a, like, we say it now deliberately like that, but actually, if you're going into accounting, there's no way you're not going to be using some kind of AI machine learning to assist you at the very minimum. I think it will touch everything.
Oh, without a doubt. Fantastic. One thing, getting back to sort of outside of tech and more into the personal side of life again, is we like to talk about passions on this show quite a lot, about music and movies and books and hobbies and interests, that sort of thing. Is there anything along those lines that you are particularly into?
I don't get to watch as many movies as I'd like to. Dragging my wife to films is always a nightmare. But I'm quite big into my music. So I used to be very into lots of dance music, drum and bass. More recently, it's been more house and a bit more chilled. But if I get the chance, then there's a group of uni boys. We do an Ibiza trip once a year. So that's my letting off steam period of getting some dancing done.
Oh, nice. It's funny you should mention that, actually, because in the car recently on the school runs, because I jump about all over the place with music, but I've been gravitating to a bit of 90s dance music a bit myself lately. I had a bit of 808 State on in the car this morning and bobbing away to that, and that sort of guy called Gerald Voodoo Ray, that sort of thing. So love it. But music is a big thing for me as well. And shameless plug here, I do have a sister podcast with Stephen Rose.
Yeah, I've listened in on a couple of those. That's
cool. Yeah, that's a real passion project that Stephen and I like to do. It works quite well for us as well, because I really know nothing about the technical side of music. I just listen to it, sing along to it badly, and dance along to it badly, and I just enjoy it for what it is, whereas Stephen can talk really passionately about the technical side of it and the history of it, and I'm like, wow, am I even qualified to be on this show with him? But I think we bounce off each other pretty well.
It's a good mix, dynamic. I know what Stephen's doing. He's putting out a lot of good content on the team side as well, obviously, so he's a good person to follow.
He certainly is, because he does the official Microsoft Inside Teams podcast, isn't he? Which he keeps threatening to have me on at some point, but we've not got to that yet. But time and
exactly, and all that again. Scheduling.
Fantastic. Well, Tom, I think I appreciate you giving me your valuable time today. It's been an absolute pleasure getting to talk to you in depth like this. Before we wind things up, would you like to share anything final with our viewers and listeners, and let them know how they can reach you if they want to reach out?
Yeah, sure. Yeah, no, it's been great to be on the show. I appreciate it. We'll definitely do it again at some point. But yeah, as far as if people are interested in Microsoft Teams and what's going on in that space, if you head over to empowering.cloud, you can sign in with email or your LinkedIn login, and then you can get access to the monthly updates and all the video content from the community. So I strongly recommend that. And yeah, if you're interested in Teams and you want to get kind of more to the minute updates, I tend to post everything first to LinkedIn now. So just find me on LinkedIn and feel free to connect or follow. I think there's huge value for the Microsoft community on LinkedIn at the moment. I'm having the best conversations on there. So I'd recommend investing a little bit of time there for sure. But anything else, just feel free to DM me. I'm always happy to help.
Fantastic stuff. Thank you so much, my friend. I like all that. Go and check out Tom's content. Go and look at Empowering Cloud. You won't regret it. So let's wind this one up. Let's put this one to bed. Go and check out the show, Cloud Conversations. We are not hard to find. We are on YouTube at Cloud Conversations. And we are also on Twitter at CloudCons365. I struggle to remember that one there nearly, but we can also find us on all the good podcasting apps as well, and things like iTunes and Spotify, and we're on Anchor also. So we're not hard to find, and we can find all the hosts, Rue, Kat, Femke, Azure, and myself on Twitter, LinkedIn, and the usual places. So come and let us know what you think of the show, and if you want to be part of the show as well as Tom has today, give us a shout. We're always interested in having people join us. So one last thing, please do go to our YouTube channel and like and subscribe. It would be great if we could get our subscriber numbers to grow a little bit. We're currently in the late 600s, and it would be great if you could spread the word and tell more people about our channel as we try and reach the community and beyond. So Tom, thank you once again, my friend. It's been an absolute pleasure. Peter, enjoy the rest of your day, and we will welcome you back anytime. So take it easy, my friend. Bye-bye.
Awesome. Thanks a lot. I appreciate it.